It's planting season, and it's not too late to make sure your crops grow up fed and happy. Regardless of your spring crop, Fed and Happy offers a variety of worm-casting solutions in liquid and solid form to supercharge your soil, your yields, and your profitability. For fast, vibrant germination and seedling growth, mix your seed with Fed and Happy's screened granular castings pre-drilling. The Fed and Happy liquid seed treat and extracts offer the ideal mix of soluble solids loaded with living beneficial biology, mycorrhizal fungi, humates, and more. The Fed and Happy small spreadable castings are ideal for fast, easy soil incorporation. The large offer long-term stability and soil growth. But you don't have to figure this out on your own. Just call 833-GO-WORMS to speak with our farm team experts for a fast turnaround on a custom solution for your needs. Fare better against pests, disease, drought, and other potential hazards this season with Fed and Happy worm castings. Visit fedandhappy.com for a healthy harvest and any lawn, garden, and tree care needs. Available for pickup and on-farm delivery. That's fedinhappy.com. Or call 833-GO-WORMS. Happy planting.
I'm fortunate that I could take a break from city life during this chaotic time and go home to the wide open spaces of Texas where I was raised. If you've been dreaming of a life off the grid, escape with me to the Emerald Triangle on this podcast rerun featuring Kings View Farms.
Welcome. You're listening to Casually Baked, the podcast. Home base for the can of curious. Thanks for tuning in.
It's high time. We had a high time. Together. Together. Yes, it's high time. We had a high time.
Together. Hi, y'all. I'm Joe, your host and cannabis lifestyle guide. I've always been fascinated by Back to the Landers. People choosing to live a self-sufficient life close to nature, growing food from the land and building an autonomous, sustainable community. The Back to the Land social movement is characterized by the idea that everyday life is methodically practiced and based on a set of moral values or choices. For many Back to the Landers, homesteading became a spiritual practice, giving meaning to daily life through the values of simplicity and anti-consumerism. Today's guest on the podcast shares a fascinating story of making his way to Humboldt County in the 1980s. He tells us of the life he made and the community he helped build that sustains him 30 years later. John Wilhelm owns and operates Kings View Farms in the Palo Verde Appellation of Humboldt County. He grows full sun organic cannabis with a zero carbon footprint using integrative pest management practices. John happily grows sacred medicine with love and positive intentions for people like you and me. I'm excited to share his story with you. So go on, take a toke of your favorite smoke and settle in. It's time to get casually baked.
I got the bottle of wine, the high dollar kind. I got the West Coast smoke, but I better just take one.
John, thanks so much for having me out at Kings View Farms. I mean, you truly do have one of the most magnificent views I've seen in Humboldt.
Thank you. Thanks for coming out.
Yeah, you know, when I was introduced to you and your farm, I thought it was so fascinating to know that someone was kind of living this back to the land 2.0 lifestyle. And so I was really hoping today that you could tell us the story, like how you decided to come out here and how it all led to where we're sitting right now. You know, that's really broad. I've heard you tell the story a little bit, and I didn't want to ask too many questions before. I want to do it now.
Yeah, it's funny. It wasn't really a decision to come out here as much as it kind of life just brought me this direction. And I met the right people at the right time, and everything kind of fell into place for me here. I think I was telling you earlier, I came out, actually, I grew up in D.C., but I came out like in my early 20s to see The Dead in Berkeley. And they were playing a bunch of shows at the Greek. And I was staying out there with some friends, and I met these people that had come down from Humboldt to see the shows, and they had the nicest marijuana I've ever smoked in my life. It was just like unbelievable. And they invited me to come up to their farms, and I did. And it was like Mecca. It was like the pilgrimage to Humboldt County. And this is like, 1985. And it was really cool. The people up here were like living the dream. I mean, they're in teepees. They're making their own buckskins. They're like farming. They're like no electricity. They have Volkswagen Beetles and Volvos. And they were just living the dream, you know? And I idealized that, I guess. And then I went back to Berkeley and lived there for a while. And I'd come back and forth and see these guys. And one year I got the opportunity to help grow for somebody down in Dugan's Mill, which is near the Nonagon, that little community. And again, it was just like I was in heaven, as a young man, looking at these older guys who were like living off the land, and they were just like something to look up to, with their integrity and how they lived. And as fate would have it, that one particular year, the helicopters came in and took everything. And I was telling you, back then, there was no cell phones around. So I had to drive out to Heartwood to use the payphone, which was like a 30-minute drive on a dirt road, a roll of quarters, And I was calling some friends in Berkeley and trying to figure out what my next move was after losing the crop. And I see this help wanted carpenter sign on the Heartwood bulletin board. And I went inside and asked for a job, and they gave it to me, and I moved in there.
So tell me a little bit about Heartwood, because that's where I'm staying.
Yeah.
And it's called the Heartwood Sanctuary for a very good reason. I want to know more about
it. It was Heartwood Institute back then. It was a healing arts school. And back in the day, they didn't teach massage therapy in that many places in the country. There was like Esalen, Still Point back in Massachusetts. There was a few places that certified people for AMTA massage licenses, so you could work at a spa or a cruise ship or whatever. And so Heartwood was one of them. And on top of that, it was like a transformational therapy experiment of human consciousness.
Yeah.
And they were doing some really cool alchemical hypnotherapy. They were doing inner child work. It was a very, very cool place to be at that time. Late 80s, early 90s, and vital, like 120 people, probably like 80 students and equal number of staff and faculty living there in this big community. A lot of our own food was being grown. There was Native American studies. There was like, it was a really
so cool.
For a 25-year-old kid, it was like another slice of heaven. So I ended up being there for 3 years and doing their maintenance, fixing things. Uh-huh. And met a lot of people in the community. We had this little morning yoga practice where people would come up, the growers or the other people, I don't want to call them all growers, but just the people that lived in the community would come up and, you'd get invited to a little trim job on a weekend or make a little money here and there. And you got to know some cool, cool people. And so after my time there, I was like, I want to be here. I love this. This is my heart's calling to me to be here. And I just put it out to the universe that I wanted to find a place to put down roots. And I asked the guy in yoga class one day if he knew of any land for sale. And he said his brother had some for sale. Just like that. So
I love the universe.
And it just like, it was crazy. We went out and looked at this land. There's red tails flying around. It was, incredible. And he offered it to me at this really low price by today's standards. Yeah. And when I told him I had no money, he's just like, well, what can you do? And I said, I'll sell my old Toyota truck and I'll give you a couple $1,000. And he's like, fine, I'll take that and I'll carry the note. And boom, handshake deal. Mm-hmm. I had 120 acres at 27 years old.
That's so cool. And I'm getting teary-eyed because when I decided, I was like, okay, I'm good at this podcasting thing and this is what I'm going to do. And I randomly met a girl in San Francisco who was getting rid of this studio equipment and was like,
there you go.
I'll give you everything in the studio for $8,000. And I'm like, well, that's great, but I don't have $8,000. And she was like, well, I'll help you get it installed.
Yep.
And then you can pay me, how much can you pay me a month? I can pay you, $500 something a month. And so then for 13 months, she let me pay out this equipment.
That's great.
And it was just
the universe can provide, when you're open, when you line yourself up and get out of your own way, things open up like that.
Totally. Totally. Oh, you made my eyes all drippy. Oh, it's so good. So you made this amazing community for yourself here.
Yeah,
I
just try to fit in with the community that was here. And then it evolved as it is, as people come and go. And there's a core of people that are, still here. A lot of them came through Heartwood in some way or another. Mm-hmm. Others through just visiting or, their own path that brought them here. But this is like some places, like I have friends in Hawaii and I know people that'll go to Hawaii with like a whole plan, you know, and they've got their money and they get a house and they get a car and they get chewed up and spit out. And there's somebody that goes there for a 2-weekend, you know, vacation, and they never leave. And so it's, they get welcomed in, you know, things open up. So it's like that here too. Some people come up here with big grand intentions and they're not here anymore.
Yeah.
And somebody came up for a weekend and they never left, you know, and it's a cool community of people up here.
So tell me a little bit about what you've created here for yourself. Like, it's really magnificent. We'll get the grand tour later, and anyone watching the video version of the podcast. We're sitting inside a home that you built.
Yeah. This is every bit, you know, it was an old barn when I got the place, and it was totally kind of falling apart. There's animals living in it. And I added on here and there, bits and pieces. This is a cool collaboration. A friend of mine who's a timber framer in Vermont came out one mud season in the spring, and we got this local timber from Tostens, which is over in Bear Butte, and put up this addition. And each part of the house is kind of a different story of a different friend that came through and helped me knock out a roof or a dormer or something. And so it's all a collaboration, you know. And I have my brothers up here too. I don't know if I mentioned that to you earlier, but you know, in 1990 when I got going here, I got my brother James came up, and he moved in up here. And we, you know, got him a little cabin, and then a piece of land came for sale next door, and we got it. And he moved over there and has his own place, and then another piece of land, and then another brother, another piece of land. And next thing you know, we have this little Walton Mountain up here.
Oh my gosh.
And we all have our own little domains, and we kind of stay out of each other's way mostly, but we're...
I think my sisters would like that.
Yeah.
We all have our own space. We can't see each other from our back porch.
Yeah.
But we're close enough that we could see each other every day if we wanted to.
Yeah. And we help each other out doing things a lot. And there's like that family community up here. A lot of the people I have up here, I've kind of like created relations with them, brothers and sisters and, you know, aunts and uncles. And, because we feel tight like that. Mm-hmm. And so my physical existence here with this house and the land is kind of just an expression of how I like to live, you know. I like it open and I like it easy, you know, not too much maintenance. And I could do a little more cleaning, I guess, but it's...
I mean, couldn't
there's
we
a place
all?
For the spiders and to hang out in the corners, I guess. But
So we've got outside of this space, like you are a legal cannabis farmer.
Yes.
Do you grow your own fruits and vegetables on the farm?
You know, as much as I can. You know, it's tough with the animals here. It's, you know, I can have a kale patch and I have some tomatoes and I can grow just about everything. And I do at times. But right now I'm fighting with the quail and the deer and everything else that wants to get in and eat the stuff.
You know,
like right now the bears are after the apples. And so we grow what you can.
Yeah.
And I do.
Well, and two, then you also have really good neighbors and everybody trades stuff.
And that's
and
the cool thing.
The market.
I bake bread. And so I trade bread for, you know, corn and apples and tomatoes. And I have a friend that has cattle and I get beef from her. And, you know, so we do a little bit of bartering up here with stuff. And
Which that sourdough is, it is definitely bakery worthy.
Yeah.
It was delicious.
Well, yeah, I sell it at the markets when I'm in town. And yeah.
So tell me a little bit more about this Back to the Land 2.0 lifestyle. Like, friends in Oakland talk about, I've purchased, you know, 30 acres somewhere. I'm just trying to figure out what my exit strategy is. You know, I'm going to go live off the grid. And in my head, I saw something very different than what I'm seeing here. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, this is cool.
Well, this has
shit.
Had like 30 years to be polished.
Certainly,
you know, when I first
certainly.
Lived here, there was a little generator and a little battery and a little solar panel and, you know, funky wiring. And it was pretty rustic for a long time. I mean, I didn't have an indoor toilet until like 20 years ago. So it was, you start out that way and then you kind of polish it. So back to the land, you know, it depends on what you're moving, what your motives are. For me, it's always been food. You know, I love cooking and preparation of food. I love growing food. I love preserving it. I love canning it. I love drying it. I love freezing it. I like making soups. I like making meals for people. And so for me, like, my favorite thing about being back to the land, or the whole impetus, was to like have your own food supply chain, you know, not to be reliant on stores and having to truck stuff up the hill. Mm-hmm. And so that's the first thing I would do. Is I was building a little homestead. It was been get my garden going, get my compost going, and you know, start making food for yourself. Because that's, you know, the whole farm to table thing California's known for came from that. It came from people growing their own food and eating what was in season when they had it, and having gatherings of people to share. You know, it's all about the gathering.
Absolutely. And I think community is such an important thing, especially when you live this far away from civilization. You have to have that closeness, that family unit. And so what kind of cannabis community are you a part of here? This morning I was getting coffee at the New Harris General Store. And you know, there were five or six growers or farmers, you know, standing around discussing gossip was going around, what cars they might have seen on what roads.
Sheriff car coming up
the
hill.
Tell me a little bit about that community.
Well, there's the grapevine, you know, you go to the store and you hear about, you know, the sheriff convoy coming up the hill, or you know, somebody got ripped off, or, you know, you hear all the local stuff, what's going on. And usually it's good news, you know, like we're all excited, you know, and we definitely share what we can, you know, like if my greenhouse wasn't so good this spring, a friend of mine will help me out with some extras that he has and vice versa. And we have some exceptionally good strains. We definitely like, hey, you got to try this, you know, give somebody some clones or something. And, you know, I think it's really like open source software here. It's like nobody's holding anything with a closed fist. We're all in this together, and it seems like we all help each other out. And the cannabis community isn't, to me, it's like we're just a community, and cannabis is part of our lifestyle up here. But as much as, you know, the fire department and the community markets and the schools and things like that.
That's a really, really good point, because, you know, cannabis is a huge piece of this community or any of these communities in the Emerald Triangle.
It was kind of the original GoFundMe, you know. Yeah. It's like that's basically how we all got everything we have, is by funding ourselves through cannabis, you know. Mm-hmm. Our fire departments, the Redwood Rural Health Center, KMUD, like everything here is donation-based, and, you know, nobody has real jobs. So.
Yeah, so all of the community services and support have all been created through this cannabis community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so cannabis is the backbone of, you know, where we are here, especially, I don't know if you know the history of Emerald Triangle and this whole thing, but like, you know, when the hippies were leaving the San Francisco area in the late 60s, moving up to communes because they thought the world was going to end, you know, the Mansons and Altamont Speedway in Vietnam, and it was crazy. So they all moved up here and they had these little communes, and these are the same people who go to India and Thailand and traveled the world as wanderers and seekers of things and religions. And they'd come back with hemp seeds sown into their, you know, hems of their clothes and grow them in their gardens up here. And then they would breed them. And that's how all the cannabis that we have now, everything we know, is kind of like Johnny Appleseeded here in Mendo and Trinity and Humboldt counties. Mm-hmm. And especially, I think, right here in this little corner of the world. And it's an amazing thing.
Well, and so you said your first heroes, the people that inspired you, were people from this original movement.
Yeah, the Nonagon, those folks that lived down on Dugan's Mill. Yeah, they were all so cool. They just like ran around like Tarzan wearing loincloths. And...
Yeah, tell me about your first experience when you're showing up there for the first time. Like, what were you seeing and taking in?
The first night I landed there, you know, I slept in some teepee out in the middle of a field. And in the morning I come out and there's like fog is misting around on the hills. And, you know, off in the distance I see these like long-haired people that are, you know, brown, tan, half naked, like, you know, out in their gardens. And I'm like, oh, where am I? What, you know, have I gone back in time? This is really cool.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So I got to Heartwood right whenever it was, like after sunset, right before it gets dark.
Uh-huh.
And they said, you know, try not to do that. It's hard to maneuver. We've got, I don't know how many acres, 200 acres or something like that. How many acres is...
It was 220 when they had the airstrip.
I go down to the little store. I find the envelope with my name on it. There's not a key in it, but I'm like, key must be down where the place is. I don't have a flashlight, which they also recommended that you have. And it says in this paperwork, like, you can drive your car down and unload your things, but we request that you stay in the parking lot. Well, I get to the gate and I can't get through the gate.
You're locked up.
And I told Claire probably 2 hours earlier, I grew up out in the country in the middle of nowhere where at night it's just pitch black.
Yeah.
And I'm not afraid of the dark, and I'm not afraid of walking in the pitch black. Well, shortly after, I was walking about, I don't know, probably a mile down a windy dirt road looking for the lower dorms and with all of my shit on me. And I was just like, how, like, what the fuck? Like,
they put you in the lower dorms?
Well, I mean, I chose something that was Well, yeah, because Casually Baked was footing the bill. Like,
you get one of the en suite rooms? No.
No. I got the one that was by the kitchen, yeah, but I had a full bed, my own room, but still a little bit like, you know, camping. I mean,
yeah,
glamping, I guess.
Well, you got the Heartwood experience.
But yeah, I got to the door and I didn't have a key. And so I was pretty crafty. I'm like, well, shit. Like, there is no phone service. I know no one. Mm-hmm. You literally are just out in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. So luckily, Claire knows people or is able to help me. And so anyway, it was quite an adventure. So it made me definitely appreciate like living in a city and all the accommodations. Yeah. But when I woke up this morning, I was like, okay, yeah, I'm glad I woke up here. There was little deer just kind of walking around.
Yeah.
I passed a skunk last night on the walk. I was like, bro, listen, just you stay over there. I'll stay over here. There was a frog on my window. Like, you're just like really part of nature
here.
No,
it's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful place. Heartwood's beautiful out there. They call that the Palo Verde Ranch. That whole area was a subdivision back in the 70s. And it used to be this Dr. Ramsey from Eureka owned a cattle ranch there. It was dairy. And then it was sold. That property was sold to a group of developers called the Palo Verdes Group. And the Army Corps of Engineers was going to dam up the Eel River down in Alder Point. And this was going to be a giant lake. And this LA group bought that property and chopped it into like over 140 acre parcels, built roads, and they were selling lakefront property, built the lodge, the airstrip, pool. And then the plug got pulled on the dam project and they went bankrupt. And so that land just sat there for years until in the late 70s, early 80s, they started selling it off. And that's when it was cheap, affordable land for hippies. You know, it was like.
Yeah.
Like,
and I think somebody had told me that there was a plot of land that had been parceled out and you know, kind of flattened, taken care of or whatever. And then they went away. And so a bunch of growers just came and started growing on it.
Yeah,
is that another place or is this
same one? I think you're talking about Heartwood or the Palo Verde Ranch.
Well, maybe it's the Palo Verde Ranch.
I think something like that happened at Heartwood. Like at one point, the lodge and resort area had been built and then they all went belly up and some people moved in and started just gorilla growing.
Yeah, because and that's what they told me why the gate was closed last night. They're like, you know,
it's trimmer season,
you know, so it's like they like to sneak up here and use the sauna and the hot tub and the pool and stuff. And I'm like, you know, growers can be like cockroaches where they're like, you cannot kill us. We will find a way. Like,
well, that experience you had of trying to find your keying in your room, it's like you have to be a little bit MacGyver when you live up here and find workarounds because everything is a challenge and you have to be very inventive and creative, you know, around figuring out how to get things done so far from amenities of the city. You know, you can't just run to the store and you can, but like to drive to town to get a hose clamp or a fitting or something like that is so long and hard. That you have to figure stuff out here and be resourceful. And it's a good lesson.
Yeah. I mean, where I grew up, it was a 70-mile drive for like the quality groceries, like getting to your Safeway.
Right.
But like, you know, the New Harris General Store, that was like 15 miles away from us. And yeah, it's one of those things if you have a plumbing problem or, you know, something happens, like you don't get to pick up a phone and call somebody to come over and fix it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Southern Engineering has done a lot for me.
Yeah.
You know, just learning those life skills.
For sure.
You said earlier that what makes you different, what makes Kingsview Farms different is that it really truly is the encompassment of this kind of lifestyle. You're like, I've been growing cannabis for 30 years.
This is your... That's
just
the
time. Yeah. I mean, come on. If you...
I've only been growing since 2016.
Oh, yes. Well, then you're not as cool as you were when I thought you'd been growing for 30 years.
I can either confirm or deny those allegations.
The whole idea is that you're in this magnificent space. You're going to grow quality cannabis. You learn how you're going to pick this up.
Absolutely.
But the thing that makes this different for you is just like the whole lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's, you know, when we were talking about this podcast and what it's going to be about and like what, and then other people asked me, like I was at Hall of Flowers yesterday and you're meeting all these cannabis growers all over the state and they're like, they're trying to create like what's unique, what do I do different? And they've got these buzzwords and they talk about stuff and, You know, I don't even like to compare myself to them because it's not why I grow it. And it's not how it came to be for me to be growing it. You know, it wasn't like I was trying to create this brand identity to my farm
for,
as a cannabis grower. Like cannabis was part of our culture. And for me growing up, you know, it's something I always have an affinity to this plant. And so what makes my cannabis farm different is that I guess it's just, I mean, it's not that much different than the other ones around here. You know, we all kind of have the same growing techniques. We share a lot of genetics. We all have our tips, we, you know, on what to do with powdery mildew and how to handle stuff and our companion growing and farming mycorrhizae. You know, we all kind of do that, you know, up here in the Emerald Triangle. Now, you know, compared to people in greenhouses and giant grows down in, you know, Palm Desert, we're really different than that. And the one thing I'll just have to say is that it's the heart that we have behind it. You know, I love this plant, you know, it's sacred to me. And so that's one of the biggest things. I really believe this plant kind of picks up on energy. It's kind of empathic, right? And I think that, you know, when you grow it with that kind of love and care, that when people smoke it or use it or eat it, however they're going to imbibe, you know, they feel the difference, you know? It's not fertilizer. It's not, I mean, that helps. But it's partly the sun and air. We got, you know, there's King's Peak. It's 20 miles away. We got air blowing in off the ocean over 5,000 miles. It's just clean and fresh. It makes landfall right here. It gives us these updrafts and down currents that help with the, you know, the plants like air. They don't like stagnant. And so we just have this amazing aspect of south facing. We have the ocean air. We have the hot, hot days, the cool, cool nights. It's just like the perfect place to be growing this. And then the way we grow it, you know, we try to keep it simple and, you know, keep our carbon footprint as small as we can and try to grow it as sustainably as we can. We always have, you know, like back in the day, we had chicken shit and oyster shells and that was it, you know, and some mulch. And we'd go out under an oak tree and find some leaves and crush them up and run them through a screen and we'd make our own stuff. And the plants are amazing then, like 30 years ago. The plants are just as awesome as they are now. I mean, they had that smell. They had that feeling when you smoked them, that iry feeling. You know, it hasn't changed that much. You know, we're reinventing the wheel of all these new amendments and fertilizers. I mean, they help for sure. But really, it's the love and intention of the person. Like they say, the best fertilizer a plant can have is the farmer's shadow. You know, and it's all about being around your plant.
Yeah. Do you talk to your girls?
Yeah.
Do you tell them stories or do you tell them how beautiful and smart they are and that they're going to grow up and make a lot of money?
There's certain plants that you just, you know, especially like, you know, now I'm kind of like trying to fit into the way it's being done with some light depth and rows of things. But like, they're still my old full season plants. They're big old mamas out in these cages, you know, and when you get up around them, you know, and this time of year, especially, and they're just glistening and it's just something about them that, yeah, you want to talk to them. You're just like, yeah, go girl.
Yeah. I talk to my friends' children and pets and cannabis plants, flowers. One of my friends is a dahlia farmer. I walk through her field and talk to the flowers. I mean, most of the time I'm high, so I'm not sure I'm like, people think I'm a crazy person, but I do. We are all connected. You know, we are sharing energy. And I do think that having those beautiful intentions does make a difference.
That's the biggest difference. I mean, you know, some of the stuff that's being grown, you know, I'm not trying to diss anybody, but like it's when you're growing it for as a widget, as a commodity, you know, and it's just about amounts of THC per square foot, you know, and you have this whole business plan you're figuring out. And it's like the plant's not really being grown in the same way. It's like different from getting you can get an organic hothouse tomato at Whole Foods and you can go to a farmer's market and get a farmer's market tomato. And the farmer's market tomato is way better. Because guy that's growing it is into it. You know, he's not in a big greenhouse factory. And I think that's what it all comes down to with most of the people I know up here, all my friends. And, you know, it's like they grow this with love in their heart. And that's what makes everything about what we do here in Humboldt County, and especially in the Emerald Triangle, and especially in Palo Verde, New Harris.
Yeah.
You know, just completely different than everything else.
Yeah, it's so important to know your farmer. And as you're saying this, we talk about, you know, we were sitting on the porch. A few of us were enjoying a smoke before we started. And, you know, talking about that farmed cannabis that's like, you know, in a warehouse that's got the artificial light and, you know, who has a totally different upbringing.
Yeah.
than flower that's grown here. And, you know, it's like you can have the exact same flower and it can make you feel completely different because of all of these factors.
Totally. If there's some like, you know, tweaker growing your weed, it's going to, you're going to make you paranoid when you smoke it and full of anxiety. So like I was in Colorado for a little while. I got into the legal market out there before California to test the waters. And I had a little grow that was in a warehouse, you know, in town, and it was in a building that had other grows. And it was like, I don't know how many licenses were in that one giant warehouse, but at break time, like 10 o'clock, you know, all these guys would come outside and they were like all tatted and pierced. And I'm not making a judgment about that, but they were like smoking Marlboros and drinking Pepsis. And they just had this demeanor of like not happy people, not happy with their, I mean, they could just as well be working at Taco Bell. Like they could care less. It was just a job, and, you know, and they were just reporting to duty. And, you know, I was thinking about it, like all the flower that came out of that. And, you know, Colorado is mostly an indoor market because they don't really have good weather like we do, unless you're on the Western Slope or in Pueblo. But anyway, it's driven by the indoor market and it's such bad stuff. It's just horrible stuff. And I feel bad for the people who have to smoke it, but the consumer hasn't figured, we haven't educated the consumer yet about the importance of buying, you know, sun-grown organic weed by good people, you know?
If you're that's just, one of my missions.
Me
I mean,
too.
I'm trying to teach people.
It's, hey, you want to get something good for your body. Like, I think people, once they realize, it's like palm oil or different things in food that you want to avoid because this is forcing the rain, you know? You want to like support these farmers up here, and maybe you're going to have to pay a little more than you would for something that's being grown mass production in a big warehouse in Watsonville. But you're going to feel better and it's going to be better for you. And in the end, the carbon footprint, you know, like again, in Colorado, they have coal-fired electrical plants. You know, they're strip mining Indian reservations in Wyoming and bringing the coal down to Denver and burning it. And it's like powering all these giant indoors and the HVAC and dehumidifiers. And like, it's just horrible. It's a horrible
That feels
thing,
terrible.
You know? And it's like, it's the same Southern Cal and everywhere. I mean, it's growing it, you know, as nature intended with the least amount of like
additives
and also the footprint, like trying to use less hortonetting, trying to use less blow pots, trying to use less plastic. You know, trying to do as much as you can on your end as a farmer to minimize what you're hauling up the hill and what you're hauling out of here to the dump, you know, and trying to keep it as really as small as you can. And, you know, the plants are, they're fine, you know, they grow really well this way.
Yeah.
You know,
with anything in life, when it comes down to the big things, it's about playing the long game. And how is this affecting me? How is this affecting my family, my community, and the greater environment as a whole? And, you know, if you can feel good about all of those decisions along the way, you can really feel good about the life you're living. And it really does turn into this really inspired life where it seems like doors and windows of opportunity just kind of open for you whenever you kind of can live in that flow. And think about that, you know, that greater
whole.
Well,
that long game that you're speaking of, I mean, that's such an essential part of what's happening up here for us and the growers is that, you know, this is our home. This is our land. We've been living here for years. We have families, generations. And, you know, for us, this has been a way of life and a lifestyle where the market's being driven right now. And God bless you on this mission of, you know, telling people about this. People are borrowing huge amounts of venture capital money, right? And then they're building a model of something that they can grow X number of pounds with. And then they're pitching this deck or portfolio to these people being like, look, we have a valuation of like, you know, $10 million. Loan us more money to build it bigger or buy us out at a 10X multiplier. So that this is the business plan that most of the cannabis industry is operating on. It's not the long play. It's not owning their own homes. It's they're creating valuation of something with somebody else's money to flip it to somebody even bigger. And it's such a short-sighted thing. It's business. It's how it's done. We're in America. But for us, we're like fighting for survival up here. I have so many friends that have thrown in the towel because they just can't make it through, you know, the compliance part of this to get a license. And it's so hard for a lot of the older folks, you know, that just, you know, when they moved up here, they never thought they'd have a desk job. They didn't think they'd have to like be filing forms with the government and dealing with them that way, you know, and they just can't fathom it, you know, and it's really sad because there's like a brain trust that we're losing of these old folks that have been up here since the beginning that just can't figure out how to make it all work, you know, and so that's a little sad. And for the rest of us, you know, we're trying to do our part to bring everyone along. And, you know, you got to talk somebody off the ledge now and then, you know, because they're just.
Yeah. Well, and two, and it seems like, you know, these towns up here, if the cannabis community here dies, so do a lot of these towns.
They are. Yeah, it's really, a lot of stores are closing up or shutting down, and people just don't have the money to spend anymore, you know, locally. And a lot of the big businesses that are coming in that, you know, not so much in Humboldt County, but in the California, they're not keeping the money in the state. You know, it's all going back to the shareholders.
Yeah.
And it's whatever. So do you want to support that? No. You want to like buy organic sun-grown flower from us up here.
Yes,
and absolutely. Pay more for it, unfortunately, but it's going to be worth it in the long run for everybody, you know?
Yeah, and like we said earlier, you know, it's buying cannabis that was intentionally produced.
Yeah.
But then also, like you said, before you consume in whatever way, you set your intention.
Right.
Like, what do you want
That's
this
exactly
to
what
do
we're,
for
we're
me?
Talking about how, like, in advertising, there's all these buzzwords about, you know, this strain is calm, and this strain is focus, and this strain is active, and this strain is sleep. And I'm like, you know, actually, you set an intention before you take it. You say what you want, you use the Santa Maria, and you get it, just like you best, you know? And so it's important to have an intention and to use this plant, you know, mindfully like that too. I mean, it's, you know, there's disclaimers you see now in alcohol ads, you know, use this with discretion, use this wisely.
Yeah,
you know?
Drink responsibly.
I think, you know, cannabis is an amazing plant, and people have had medical benefits from it. And it's just fun to use too, you know? It's just fun to listen to a Cheech and Chong album, you know, and crack up. Yeah. Get a good laugh going. Somebody told me something a long time ago that I've always remembered about this plant, and she was calling it Santa Maria. And she said, you know, it's very wise, and you know, it's like a mother. And if you want, you can just climb into her lap, and she'll stroke your head and make you feel all better, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's comfort, you know. And then there's also this other side of her that's like super wise. And if you ask a question, you know, and then take a smoke, you know, you'll get guidance and wisdom.
Yeah. I need to be doing a little bit more of that lately.
So it's a balance. Have fun with it. Take comfort in it, but use it wisely too.
Absolutely. And, you know, like I told you, I microdose for anxiety and OCD pretty regularly throughout the day just to help keep myself normalized and functional and out of that monkey brain. But yeah, there are a lot of times when you have this like big decision to make, or you're like, I don't know what to do. Like what, you know?
Yeah.
And that's something that I haven't, you know, and I do a lot of meditation, but like to just like ask the question, just put it out there, ask the question.
Or even ask what the question is, you know, like if you don't know, you know, sometimes you just need to... You're like, what am I looking for? You know?
Yeah. Because sometimes you don't. Sometimes it is hard to figure out exactly what the question is. John, tell me, is there anything that you think that the audience should know or something that I didn't ask you that is important that you want to touch on?
God, I'm sure there's something I'll think later that I'm like, oh, I should have said something about this. No, I just really appreciate you making the trip out here. You know, we're way out in the middle of nowhere, and it's really cool when people come up and pay us a visit, and I really appreciate, you know, what you're doing with this podcast, and what do I want to say? Just have fun.
Yeah. Well, you know, I tell people that it's like Christmas Eve for me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like getting to walk through the flowers and
it's a great time of the
year
and
see what's happening. Yeah. And you know, everything's changing. Everything's in transition. There's so much hope. You know, there's a lot of excitement, and you know, to be able to share these voices of harvest and and what it is like to be a farmer, and especially in this modern legal landscape, what it's like to be a farmer who's doing it right and who is maintaining this back to the land lifestyle. There's such a money grab right now.
Yeah, there is.
And so it's been very nice and peaceful and pleasant to be in a part of your world.
Thank you. Yeah, it's cool. Too bad you can't get to the farmer's market in town today, because it is an amazing time of the year with all the vegetables coming in. In addition to the cannabis, there's amazing...
Which town?
In Garberville.
I was at that farmer's market last Friday.
Okay. Yeah, it's 11 to 3 today. It's awesome. And there's a huge base of people in this community growing food as well as cannabis. And it's cool to come together with that. And,
yes, you know. I interviewed a few of the farmers last Friday for the Voices of Harvest series. And then I bought some cool ceramics from some guy for a weed jar.
Oh, cool. Put your weed in it.
Well, because I like super attractive things, like, you know, that are not just a glass jar, which of course, you know, you don't want your cannabis in a clear glass jar. And, you know, a lot of times when you get it from your farmer friends, it's just in a mason jar. So, you know, you got to put it somewhere else to keep it safe.
Keep it dark. Yeah.
But anyway.
True.
Yeah. So I supported the Garberville market last week. So today I'm going to head back up to Heartwood and get in the pool and the
I mean, I guess one thing I'd like to say, one more last thing is I want to so the audience or whoever's listening to this stuff, I'd like everybody to do their own due diligence and really understand like where this is coming from, where your cannabis is coming from. Like, do, you know, educate yourself about the plant and about its effects and about who's farming it, how they're farming it, and the practices that they're using. And, you know, tell your friends and educate them, you know, when you see somebody, you know, hey, where are you getting that weed from, you know?
Yeah.
Who, you know, is it good? Is it, you know, is it going to help you out? Is it going to help the planet out? Is it going to bring us all, you know,
absolutely
enjoyment.
Make being highly responsible a cool thing.
Yeah, vote with your dollars, you know, where you get it from, who you buy it from, and what you do with it, and enjoy it, have fun with it, and but be, you know, respectful of yourself and others. And I don't know, I mean, I don't know what to say, because I have had this dilemma around, like, you know, I grow this product and I love it, but some people might abuse it, and, you know, am I responsible for that? And I do feel like I am, partly, you know, and I just want people to all be okay.
Yeah. Well, maybe when those people are smoking your weed, because it's got your aura around it, maybe it's the weed that helps them, like, have an aha moment instead.
Well, yeah, totally. And I put that intention into it back in the spring when I first crack seeds. I do a little prayer, burn some cedar for them and soak them and then get them going and, like, kind of like start the year off with like a good intention that this is all for healing. And it's, you know, whatever healing means. It could be fun for you. It could be checking out in front of the TV. It could be whatever, you know?
Yeah.
But it's...
What is your favorite strain that you've grown this season?
Well, let's see. I mean, there's a couple of favorites. I mean, one of the best flavors is this wedding cake that we're growing. It just has an amazing smell. The show winner was this banana OG. We tested it at 29.8% THC for outdoor crop. Was like super high.
Yeah.
And this lemon banana sherbet, and I should give a shout out to my buddy Dan over at Rebel Grown, who gave me the Emerald Cup winning double OG chem cuts to grow, and they came out really nice. So we've got some fun stuff.
Well, I can't wait
on the shelves
to go down and check it out.
Yeah, through King's View or King's View at Flocana. I think you'll see funder jars and dispensaries that way.
Right on. So you're under the Flocana brand.
They're my distributor.
Yes, but the Flocana jar, like if we find those amber brown jars with Flocana, we can find the
Kingsview Farms.
And then
there's a little label that goes over top that'll say Kings, Kingsview Farms. And through them, Willie's also has picked some up. And
so if someone is looking to find one of your strains specifically, do they go to your website to do that? Do they go to the Flocana site? Like, how do you find where you are?
If you're a distributor, you know, a licensed distributor, you can contact me through, you know, admin at Kingsview or the website, or hit me up on Instagram, and I can transfer legally pounds to you that you can either sit in your dispensary, however that goes. But for most people wanting to buy a few grams, you'd have to go to a dispensary.
But are there a list of dispensaries that you're in?
I don't
or
have
that,
that
on the
list,
Flocana
but the Flocana
site.
Website, would have that.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. I'm trying to get into more if anyone wants me.
Yeah, and do you know about Confident Cannabis?
No.
Look into that site. Say I really love your wedding cake and your cannabis is on this site. It's a place where people can buy. Like, you could have your strains up there and a distributor or people, they can buy your product. But they do like the complete chemovar breakdown. And so you can find strains that are chemically very similar.
Matching the terpenes and the cannabinoids.
But that could be another place to shop your wares.
Man, I would love to get more exposure out there in the world. And then I'm just trying to keep my head above water with all the compliance work that I'm doing. It's so hard.
Well,
but
I'm doing an episode next week on those headaches of compliance for you guys.
Yeah. Who saw this coming? I mean, I swear 30 years ago, running around, you know, back to the land. And now I'm like, lawyers and computers and like,
yeah, you're like, well, how am I pushing paper?
Forms. What's going on? I know, pushing paper. I got a desk job. How did that happen?
Yeah. Well, bless you and all of that.
Thank you.
Happy harvest to you.
Thank
and
you.
Thanks
this
again.
This is my 30th harvest. I was telling you earlier, on this land is, well, yeah, 30th season, 30th harvest season.
That's
pretty cool.
Impressive.
It is. It's wild.
Yeah. OG.
OG.
All right. Thanks for hanging out.
Thank you.
John and I share the belief that the cannabis plant is empathic and embodies the energy of the farmers who care for it. King's View flower is grown with heaps of love, care, the hot sun, and cool ocean air. After spending the day with John talking history and exploring the King's View garden, my heart was bursting. I really hope our conversation helped give you a better idea of the difference between intentionally grown cannabis versus mass-produced flower. If you're inspired by this look at Back to the Land 2.0, I hope you'll share this episode of the podcast with a friend. Claire joins me on the farm tour, so you'll find both videos and pictures of my time with John at King's View Farms in the podcast 108 show notes at casuallybaked.com. Find and follow John and King's View Farms on Instagram at King's View Farms. Check out one of those amazing loaves of bread that John baked for Claire and I. I'm telling you, these Back to the Landers, they know what's up. I hope you're enjoying the Voices of Harvest podcast bonus series, celebrating the craft of cannabis farming and the art of storytelling. Be sure to send me your canna curious questions or concerns at casuallybaked.com for inclusion on a future episode of the podcast. Socialize with me on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. I'm at casuallybaked. Casually Baked, the podcast, was created, recorded, and produced by yours truly. Editing and sound design are in the capable hands of Arnav Gupta. La Osa is in the house capturing and editing the video version of the podcast, available on YouTube and channel 203 on Cannabis Club TV. The podcast theme music is by my highly talented friend Seth Walker. If you aren't familiar with Seth's music, you can find High Time on his album Gotta Get Back wherever you're finding your music these days. I know he didn't create High Time for me, but it sure as shit sounds like he did, right? I hope you'll tune in next time. Thanks for hanging out.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
Hi, I'm Gary, and I invite you to discover the Cannabis Podcast, a bi-weekly podcast focused on a Canadian's cannabis culture. I'm a Be the Canadian, and my cannabis passion and culture has been building for 5 decades. I share that passion for this wonderful plant in every episode, through conversations with cannabis advocates and enthusiasts, stories about the ever-changing legal environment, and some hands-on testing of product in a segment I call Cultivar Corner. The Cannabis Podcast, a Canadian's cannabis culture, one toke at a time.